Welcome to Under the Ginkgo Tree. Thank you for joining us today. We have a very special episode, don't we, Jim?
Yes, we do.
Today, we have an interview with Dimitri, the traveling artist for God. Dimitri is someone that I met through his connection with the Catholic worker community. He has come to visit both Mary House and St. Joseph's House here in New York City multiple times to lead these community mural projects within the house in the outer space, where he just kind of has this incredible way of bringing in people to be a part of this process that he has cultivated, created, just over many years of doing this work. And his inspiration really just comes right from God and from all the communities he's working within. And so in today's episode, we have a longer interview with Dimitri because there was so much wealth of the wisdom that he wanted to share.
Yeah. I mean, Dimitri, I had the opportunity to meet him first at the Worker, too. And, you know, I've admired his murals over the past couple of years. And, I mean, just to see his process and the depth of his presence throughout, like, the creative process is pretty remarkable. A lot of what we've tried to do over the past, you know, year and a half of collabing through the Degnan Institute is to bring students to the Catholic Worker and to bring people from the Catholic Worker to campus. So it was really powerful to have Dimitri come to campus and paint with students during week 14 of the semester.
Yeah.
Like right at the end of the semester, we spent all week with well over 100 students contributing to this painting. During that time, like right at the beginning of that process, we got the news that Pope Francis had passed away. And so we included him in this group painting. One of our students, Jitapa, really led that practice of capturing Francis's spirit. She sketched him, she painted him. And I will say, like, one of the most powerful things out of that experience for me is the fact that, like, she really spent a ton of time with Dimitri, you know, kind of like learning how to put together a large painting like that. And then she later came to Agape Community with this group that we brought through the Office of Mission and Ministry. And she led us all in a group painting project at Agape. So there's a sense of, like, you know, the lineage of creativity that Dimitri is in as like a Catholic worker artist, then he's bringing other people into it.
Yes.
You know, like,
yeah, you get this sense from Dimitri that, like, you know, these gifts are just abundantly offered from the earth, abundantly offered from God, from community. And how can we cultivate these? How can we share these with others? And, you know, our student was kind of really just learning from him, and then this was just shared more freely with this next project, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, you know, I learn a lot from Dimitri just in the way he moves through the world, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't move through the world kind of in this way that many of us have, you know, become just like we become accustomed to, and we just like live, we rest ourselves within the systems that are like the status quo, right? And he kind of, like, through his life, you know, he's often on pilgrimage, he's often traveling, and he just constantly kind of resisting the, you know, setting in place to these systems.
Yeah.
Right. And through that way, you know, just when you meet him, you just pick up this just like really great kind of vibe, the spiritual energy that he exudes. And I think that comes through in the conversation as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's so striking, his freedom, his spiritual freedom. He doesn't have a cell phone. He moves through the world with this sense of not being attached to a particular place permanently, but simultaneously having all these really deep, profound, personal connections to, like, this whole web of places, you know, specifically Catholic workers. So because of the way he travels through the world, he really tries to avoid flying, for instance. you get this sense that he's just deeply attuned to place. I mean, yes. He like carries like this quality of presence with him where he's in and of the earth. He's attuned to the earth. He's attuned to like the specificity of a place because of how he moves through it. And it's just, it's a remarkable quality that I experienced in him. I think a lot of the students were really struck by him because, I mean, he's living in such an authentic way in which he is prioritizing his passions and he's living a life of service. I mean, he does... It's bread and roses, you know. He creates art for universities, for schools, not really for, but with, right? Yeah. It's all collaborative for soup kitchens, for Catholic workers. And then as he's there, he's volunteering, you know? So his presence is powerful. His stories are really powerful. I'm really glad that you were able to have this extended conversation with him. Because he just carries so much through all of his experiences,
Absolutely. And I think I speak for both of us when I say that he is really like a teacher, and we learned a lot from him just by being in his presence and by working with him, like you said.
Yeah.
So we hope that you enjoy this conversation and perhaps you could begin to learn alongside of us with Dimitri.
So thank you, Dimitri, for being here, for sitting with me.
Thank you, Holy Spirit, for being here with us as well. Thank you, Liam. Thank you for your hospitality.
Glad we can sit down and have this conversation. And I just want to start by asking you to share a little bit about your own personal journey. And so I know you're a traveling artist for God, and you've written powerfully about that for the New York Catholic Worker newspaper. You just live that with your own life shows that. So if you could just kind of talk a little bit about what led you to art, what led you to God, and how interconnected that is?
When I was young, I was like 20 years old, I went on my third personal journey. And the first two were with my friend Francis, and we hitchhiked up to San Francisco from LA. And then I had an epiphany on that journey. It was a revelation, you know. And then we hitchhiked up to Canada and had another epiphany. And these are moments where you have this realization of some sort. But the third journey, I went by myself and I drove across the country in a VW van and back. And I had a revelation. I had the realization about God, because I went searching for the truth and God showed up, you know. And God, like,
yes.
I was in kind of like what you might call baptism by fire. Some dude in southern Louisiana wanted to beat me to death, and God showed up and saved me. And not even in like a unnecessarily heavy-handed way, but God just gave me an understanding at that moment of the situation, and I trusted in God, and it all got relieved in an instant. So that was the beginning of the journey, because when I realized God was real, I was like, oh, that simplifies everything, you know? And I just had to ask, okay, God, now I know you're real. What do you want me to do? Because at 20, you could do anything. I came from a middle-class family, and I could get any education, any training. Yeah. I could travel anywhere. I could do anything. And God's answer was surprising, at least to conventional wisdom. Because God's answer was, and it happened over a few years, because God would, every time I asked him, what do you want me to do? God would keep on showing me what to do. And the pattern seemed to be, keep traveling, keep volunteering, keep doing the creative arts, and share the good news.
Yeah.
Very simple, very fulfilling, very meaningful. So then I kept on doing that. As I did it, life opened up. The world, the universe, myself, all of these things started to open up, and it was so liberating. But everything that I was seeing in the world, and I call that Babylon. It's a scriptural term, as some people would know, and other people use the word matrix or system or empire. It keeps on putting blockades, and it keeps on putting obstacles and corralling you and guiding you towards one answer to your question. It's like, we're the answer, we're gonna it's us, it's we'll help you, blah blah blah. But what they offer is usually more bondage, And I would, since I was experiencing this freedom on the road, traveling,
yeah,
and I saw it was from God. God kept on giving me this freedom and this opportunity because I was healthy and I was just had just left childhood and I was young adult and and the world was amazing and like, what is, how big and how beautiful and how wondrous, and I what are the ins and outs and ups and downs, and so that all was very exciting, and that God was blessing it. Oh my gosh, you know?
Yeah. So. And I'm just really struck by the way, and oftentimes you'll share this in conversation too, just like you've shared at different crossroad moments in your life or when you're on pilgrimage or any number of things that you just like ask God, okay, God, show me right now. What do I need to do? How do I move forward? And God shows you one way or another. Just the clarity that you have, you know, that you're able to ask God, you know, pray to God in community with people, right? And that God will show you an answer. I find that really just like beautiful. And can you just like talk a little bit more about that?
It's interesting. Everything you said was very awesome, except you said right now. Like, tell me right now. That's not my attitude. It's more like, hey, God, I'm listening. Let me know. I'm paying attention. You're my end all be all. I'm listening. And so I got to wait on God's timing. And that is part of the development of wisdom. The humbling ourselves. When we humble ourselves, I've come to the ends of my own abilities, and I don't want to ask somebody else. I want to ask the one that knows.
Yeah.
So I'm here. Let me know. And Jesus said it. He said, "Ask God." So what I learned, and this is why the journey was such a valuable medium through which to learn these things.
Yeah.
Because when you're on the road, you're constantly making choices: left, right, up, down. Which way do I go? Do I go plane, train, or you know, or a horseback, or do I walk this one out? You're constantly having to make these choices, and if you realize that all those choices, you know, they have some practical value, but the ultimate lesson is to learn how to hear God's voice.
Yeah.
What a valuable skill worth developing. Would you be willing to use 1 year? Invest 1 year in learning that? How about a decade? Would that be, do you think you can learn how to hear God's voice in a decade?
Yeah.
Traveling the globe, me, that was extremely valuable because I figured now that I know God's real, knowing that voice was going to be the deciding factor in countless situations where somebody'd have like their boot on your throat, or they'd have their whatever pressure, their gun to your head, or their hand in your pocket, or their whatever.
Yeah.
And if you had a really good, clear understanding, say, God, what do I do? And God says, blah, 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 blah. And you hear, okay. And you do it. And then the whole thing unravels in an instant. You're like, thanks, Lord. You know, that just happened. But I had years, decades to explore that and enjoy the process of learning that while I was traveling through one of the most beautiful continents. Not that South America isn't as beautiful as North America, it is. And my education was in a beautiful university called Planet Earth, the Paradise Planet Earth.
Yeah.
But that was the thing worth learning.
Yeah.
You know, learning how to make $1 million did not seem that significant when you grew up around a lot of very unhappy, wealthy people. You're like, oh, that's not doing them so awesome. But people who are dialed in, man, to the Almighty, they seem peaceful and they seem joyful and they seem happy. And I'm not talking about just like the pious religious people. I'm talking the people who like live their faith. And then when you travel the globe and you see people of many different faiths who are super humble economically, but they're very kind people, you know, Hindus and Buddhists and all the different monotheists and all these different people of the world, and they're gentle and they're kind, and then you're like, oh, that is the mysterious infinite source of life. And when you develop relationship with that and you honor that primary relationship between you and your source of life, creator, it simplifies things.
Yeah.
simplifies things.
So one of the ways we're connected is through the Catholic worker movement.
Yeah.
And you touched a little bit about all the ways you've learned from, you know, various like faith traditions, just like seeing people just like living in their tradition and just like sharing kindness, sharing love, and how you can learn from that. And so I wonder if you can speak a little bit about your connection with the Catholic worker, and also just like where are other kind of spiritual homes perhaps that you found along the way?
The first time I encountered the Catholic worker was in Rochester, New York. And I was just on the road. I was actually at a farm animal sanctuary. I think it was Watkins Glen near Cornell University. And I was there because I was very interested in the environmental issue and the cause and the earth. I was trying to see, volunteer at different environmental groups. I once worked at a wolf refuge. And so when I was there, I met a person who said she was connected to the Rochester Catholic Worker. And then later on, I met another person. And these two people both said, check out the Rochester Catholic Worker. They're doing some cool stuff. So I said, all right, I'm on the road. I'm in the flow. Let me see what the Creator is saying right now. So I went there and I saw, and already being on the street quite often and on the road all the time, I was learning that I saw one of the best examples of service to the unhoused homeless community I had ever encountered. They were open-handed. They didn't proselytize. They answered every need that the homeless have: mail, washing machines, showers, phones, yeah. Food. Well, you know, they even had a faucet outside so unhoused people, street people, could come by and fill up their water jugs.
Yeah.
And then across the street, another group had teamed up with them, and it was a free clinic. Those are so many like merciful offerings from a benevolent organization that I was very impressed. And I saw that they had kind of anarchist leanings, which is another level of freedom. But they were also faithful people of they were people of faith. I wouldn't even call them religious, but they had a religious tradition, right? They had a church downstairs, and then they had a community that lived in the building. And I was very attracted to what they were doing, so I started volunteering there, and they invited me in, and then I offered a mural, and then we teamed up for this project. That was compelling to me. And after I finished the project, I kept on all my travels. And eventually, a friend in New Mexico started a Catholic worker. Somebody donated him a house. It was in the South Valley in Albuquerque, which is a very dynamic community. You know, it's very historical, agricultural community. So they're very humble people.
Yeah.
And the Catholic worker was there. And so I got to learn it and be part of it again. But then when I was there, I connected with the Anabaptists or the Mennonites, and they were the first church that I encountered that spoke against the Iraq-Afghanistan war from the pulpit. And I was impressed by that. And the reason why that grabbed me so much was I had just returned from traveling around the globe, and when I came in to the back into the country, I was from Peru, and I flew into Miami. And when I arrived, empty pockets. So I had to tramp all the way up Florida.
Wow.
And I tramped all the way up to some friends of mine in New Jersey. And then from there, all the way back to LA. And in the process, I would often sleep on the doorsteps of churches. And I would, I'd see the parishioners, or I'd see, you know, Protestants, Catholics, whatever. And I would see the parishioners, or I'd see the clergy, and I would always ask them, I'd say, how do you feel about the war? How do you feel about the president? And it always amazed me. They were like, rah, rah, rah for war.
I was gosh. Wow.
What about our friend Jesus? What about what Jesus said?
Right.
Because I remember what he said, and I read it again and again and again. And he said, you know, love your enemy. He said, pray for those that persecute you.
Yeah.
Turn the other cheek.
Mm-hmm.
He said, live by the sword, die by the sword. So he said it many times. But I saw the whole country, like even the religious people get into it. They're like, yeah, war.
Yeah.
And I was like, the moral authority that some of those right-wing or mainstream Christians had before kind of disappeared. So when they started to, like, proselytize to me, I was like, well, how about this? And they'd be, oh. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
Never mind. So let me see the people who are not using Jesus to justify war. Let me see those people.
Yeah.
But it was also because Jesus tells us what to do. He's telling us to love each other and to help each other. And not only just love each other, I love you, but mm-hmm. also, like, to feed people and house people and clothe people and express, like, physical forms of love, like, I am helping you, sort of, or God is helping you through me, sort of thing. And then I was, when I was seeing that, and I was seeing this also, this justice witness of resistance to war, nonviolent resistance to war, I was seeing that, I was seeing Christ through that, as opposed to this BS theology that some people were pushing to justify the mainstream agenda.
That's incredible. It sounds like that, like, planted a seed in you when you heard that preacher. Right. And I think, like, I've had similar moments in my life where in any church space, any Christian church space, you become accustomed to preachers just kind of going with the status quo and just going in line with capitalism, with militarism, with, you know, whoever the current president is, just like going, you know, preaching sermons that are comfortable with whatever's going on in the mainstream. It's powerful when you hear something from the pulpit, like you said, that challenges that, because, you know, we see these people as spiritual, religious authorities, obviously, and can help us to clarify, like, what are our morals? Like, they're in a position of sharing. Where is Jesus in right now? Yeah, right? Man. And how can we follow that path?
Yeah, the Anabaptists were interesting, because when I started to hear that, and it was because I met a young Anabaptist who was volunteering at a day shelter in Albuquerque named Bryce. But what I learned, because I had actually worked with the Anabaptists, actually the Amish, in Pennsylvania in 95, and I lived with the family and I helped them, and it was very, very cool. I started to listen to their history, and apparently the Anabaptists had been resisting conscription to war for 400 years.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness, that is quite a witness. I just got educated.
Yeah.
I just learned something.
Yeah.
Only later did I learn, and it was during during the war now, during the Ukrainian-Russian war, I learned watching the TV with my mom, and they were bombing Kiev, and my mom says, your grandfather was from there, or your great-great-grandfather was from there. It's like, oh, really? Yes, he escaped with his brother from conscription to war. The Tsar wanted to conscript soldiers for some stupid war, some random war. They're always having wars.
Yeah.
And but they fled to Hungary. And that was, you know, part of their, I guess, progression.
Yeah. You know, earlier we just came from our Integral Ecology Circle meeting. And the Integral Ecology Circle is this group here at Mary House Catholic Worker. And we plant, we grow, and sustain our rooftop garden. You know, today we had a little bit of a prayer for Pope Francis, to remember Pope Francis, to continue to live in his witness and what he taught us for integral ecology. But something you said in the circle, just about, you know, empires, Babylon, rises and falls. Yeah. We see that in history.
Yeah.
But what is the power of the Holy Spirit?
Amen.
How do we tap into that? How do we trust, listen to God? And that's also just where I'm hearing it's like, this is patient work. This is work we have to pay attention to over time, right? So we ask God, and, you know, this God is here. God is sustaining our life force, right? And the more we can listen to that and move away from the empire, right? It's like that's going to give us life.
That subject is how do we draw closer to God, or how do we become more in line with God?
Yeah.
It seemed like Christ was teaching us that. It also seems that Buddha and many of the other teachers were giving us that knowledge on how to be one in alignment with the divine.
Yeah.
One of the things that Jesus taught was forgiveness. And as I've been pilgrimaging for in the last 5 years, I've had a lot of time just by myself, walking long distances. And when you walk, you have a lot of time to listen to God and to talk to God and like go deeper into stuff. And one of the things that came into my mind were people that I felt had hurt me or, you know, I had a grudge against, or whatever my petty offense was in my heart or whatever. And I started to realize I had to repent for the hard-heartedness or whatever the bad feeling was, but also forgive them. And Christ is some, I've heard some people call Christ the guru of forgiveness. I think he was, that was one of his great teachings to liberate us from the bondage of this world, was to forgive. And we get hurt all the time, man. When we're children before we can defend ourselves, when we get older and we start to like develop these defensive mechanisms, and then, but, and often people don't have ways to process it.
Yeah.
But pilgrimage, walking, turned out to be a really good way for me, at least. Some people just like to spend time in nature, or they do some sort of martial art, or the yoga, or the meditation, or what have you, or service, devotional service. That's another way. Processing all this of this emotional stuff, that's this trauma that's inside of us, is crucial for our well-being. It's the internal work that we have to do, especially people who are trying to change the world. If we're not changing ourselves and we think we're changing the world, you're mistaken. You're just actually adding to whatever the conflict and chaos is. But if you do the work inside yourself, you're like making peace with your partner. You're making peace with your neighbor. You're making peace with your classmate, your cellmate, you know, the person, your workmate, you know, or even somebody who riding on the subway with, or somebody just screams at you because they're angry for no reason,
right?
Let alone political stuff, or you know, if we're able to do that, you're changing the world profoundly. Because you're starting locally, you're affecting every relationship that you're in. You'll be more peaceful when you talk to your brother or your best friend or your beloved child or whatever. It's we don't, so a lot of people don't realize how much power they have.
Yeah.
Because, you know, or they don't know how to do it. They don't know actually how to start changing the invisible world of inside. So God showed me three beautiful ways to do that. And one of them, in the last 5 years, God has been showing me pilgrimage, by pedestrian pilgrimage, prayerful pedestrian pilgrimage. If I have this big issue, God, help us protect the waters. And in the West, the waters are under duress.
Yeah.
So then I started to walk with groups of people and started to seek answers, because I know God has the answers, but we have, you know, we have these questions. And I could see that they were trying to privatize the fresh waters in the West, and they were polluting them aggressively, and they were also like with fracking and stuff that destroys vast amounts of water. Yeah. And then it's, you know, it's like all this destruction. And if, unless we get real familiar with our water and get like figure out how to, with God's help, protect it, we're going to be enslaved. We're going to be enslaved very easily. And so as I was walking, and I did it 3 years in a row because it was so fruitful, you're learning about yourself, doing personal healing. God's giving you revelation about what the solutions are to these problems while you're reconnecting with the natural world.
Yeah.
You develop very intimate relationship. One of the examples was on the way, walking through the desert, I learned this term, it just came to my mind, Saint Tree.
Wow, Saint Tree.
Saint Tree, man. I was at Chimayo, which is a sacred, a healing place for the Catholicism in New Mexico, northern New Mexico. And before the Spanish took it over, the indigenous people recognized it as a healing place as well.
Wow.
Now they all share it, you know. It's Chimayo. And there's all these statues of saintly people and and right, women, men, all these like saintly people. And I was camping there, and at night I just walk around just meditating and talking to God, and so blissed out, man. But then I started to notice in the midst of this like statue garden were these massive ancient cottonwoods.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh, Saint Tree. But then God said, you know, point made, son, I'm going to show you why that's so true. As I walked through the desert, how many countless times did a tree save me from sun? from rain,
yeah,
from wind, from hail.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Saint Tree, thanks for showing up again. Saint wow. Tree, man. So we redeveloped that relationship with Mother Nature. With we can personify it, call her Mother Nature or whatever. It's a genderless thing, but it's mm-hmm. like we still, it's a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And on that journey, these things were happening. It was a challenge to the body. It was a challenge to the mind, a challenge to the heart. But as you keep on walking through and maybe you do a chant or maybe you do a prayer or maybe you just let your mind, your thoughts roll or you practice, doing stuff with your breath or what have you, this transformation happens.
Wow. Yeah, and those trees were there for your protection. They showed up and you were in relationship to them as you were walking. I love that, you know, you saw Saint Tree and then God showed you, kind of like affirmed that for you. And I imagine you see a lot of different species of trees. You see different landscapes just across your pilgrimages across this continent. I wonder if you could just touch on a little bit of that. Like, what are some of the different trees you see? You know, what are the different landscapes you encounter?
Well, in the West, by the grace of God, I've been able to pilgrimage in 4 states. One was California, and a lot of that foliage is very familiar to me. So the oak trees, the live oaks especially, but also the valley oaks and the different oak trees are astounding. And even after the fires that hit LA,
wow.
like a month of rain, and here comes all this new growth, man.
Wow.
But I've been noticing, because California's gotten really good rain and really good last 3 years, really good winters, maybe even 4 years, like crazy snow in the mountains as well, that drought-stressed oak trees that I've been noticing for like a decade were like flush with green.
Wow.
You know? And to see them healthy like that, you're like, you're with them and you're like growing with them and you're mature and you totally. See them recover from fire and you're like, wow. Right? And then you're like learning how strong they are to survive, how thick their skin is. And then there's also sycamores, and they're a great friend, and they're beautiful. And interestingly enough, sycamores are all across the country. Especially they're on the East Coast, but there's a lot in the West Coast as well. They're a native plant. And then bay leaf down south, it's just a riparian tree, and it's really beautiful and very fragrant. They use it for food and spaghetti and stuff. But when I went up north to Marin County, oh my gosh, these old growth bay trees at Point Reyes Station, just like stunning. You walk into this grove of them and you're like blown away by the fragrance.
Wow.
Really?
It smells like, because I'm familiar with bay leaves. You taught me something. I didn't know those leaves grew from trees.
Yeah.
Because I buy them in the spice jar aisle in the grocery store, you know?
Yeah, man.
So you taught me something. So
it's a native plant.
It smells like the seasoning kind of that, you know, you get from the...
Check it fresh.
I mean, I'm sure it's much... Yeah.
Dude, fresh. You're like... Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was just in Cal. And
okay.
I remember one time me and my friend Rufo, when we were pilgrimaging, we pedestrian pilgrimaged San Diego to San Francisco, and it took us 5 years, like 100 miles every winter. And our last spot on one stretch was at Salinas. And then I knew the spot because I'd scouted it the year before. And here came that we didn't know if it was going to rain or not.
Okay.
So, but I knew a spot where we could get off the road and we had a nice view. We could see the whole valley. And, but I also said, hey, Rufo, these are our options for sleeping just in case it rains. There's an underpass over there that it's really gnarly, there's like porta potties that we could like get cramped in. But there's also this thick tree with a thick canopy and we could duck under that. And that's what we eventually did. So once again, Saint Tree, man, showing up. And that was an oak tree. But it was like, or it might have been an oak bush, oak shrub.
Sure.
Because there's oak shrubs. The other time I pilgrimaged was through New Mexico and Colorado. And a lot of the trees there are juniper.
Okay.
And the juniper is a very beautiful tree. And then the cottonwoods are astounding. The cottonwoods, I don't think they're native, but they took hold, and they have created something called a bosque along the Rio Grande, and that's a forest of cottonwoods, man. And if you ever get to walk through that,
wow,
it's glorious.
Wow.
It's so gorgeous, man. And that's along the Rio Grande. The fourth state that I walked through was Minnesota, and I wasn't familiar enough with the foliage there to be able to name too many of the trees.
Yeah.
But that pilgrimage was very amazing too. It's the biggest water state on the continent.
Yeah.
And it's the source of the Mississippi, and it has Lake Superior on one edge of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like such a huge thing, and they were hit with drought for 2 years. I watched the Mississippi River down 10 feet.
Wow.
Right? And it's, man, if you disrespect the waters, they will diminish.
Yeah.
Right? And they were up there with oil rigs and line 3 and
right,
all this other stuff with the pipelines and crossing the Mississippi River.
Right.
And these people are not careful with their oil.
No.
Yeah, it's gross. So I got very familiar with the waterways on these water walks. That was the big lesson. Mm. And I think the more you do it, the more familiar you start getting with the foliage, because you can start taking notes. You're not just thinking about making miles. You're like noticing more stuff.
That's such a deep attunement to the land, right? You're just, yes, learning the land so closely,
yeah,
when you're walking. And even like you said, like when you saw the oak trees, right, in California, yeah, like it's like you're growing with them. You're with that, like you're in this. And just like even the like wisdom that you just shared, that like, you know, if we disrespect the water, we feel that, you know, like that's a part of like our ecosystem. That's what we need to drink, right? So we can't just like treat the waterways terribly and just like think everything's going to be okay, right? It's like water doesn't just come from like the water bottle that we buy at the store. Like going back to that, it's like this is coming from Mother Earth. Yeah, these pilgrimages give you deep attunement to the earth. It puts you in touch with the fact that we need to be in deeper relationship,
yeah,
to the earth, right?
It's interesting because the focus for a lot of these pilgrimages has been the waters, because of how precious and how closely we are connected to them for our sustainable life. But to see like all four of the states that I walked through,
yeah,
and had drought, extreme drought,
yeah, wow,
for decade, man. And I mean, Minnesota was only a couple years, but extreme. And it started to like occur to me, if we're not careful, if we're not thoughtful, if we're not mindful about these things, the fools who are doing the capitalist, the extractive industries are going to destroy it, and they're not going to care because they're going to, we have money, but money is made up. It's,
yeah,
like you can't drink money.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to need some water.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Can you say more about money?
So on the road, I you know, you get a lot of time to just talk to God and listen to God, and stuff comes to your mind. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to get a job that taxed my intellect too much, because I wanted to keep it loose so I could listen. I could like use my mind for what it was for.
Yeah.
Which was to like do good work and figure out good stuff. And so I would use it to listen to God. I'd present questions, we'd have a conversation, and I came up with a thing. I said, God, I don't want to chase after money, and I don't want to run away from money. I just want to have peace with money. And then God gave me an answer in four different places, when like geographically different places that I crossed in like 500 miles or something. They said, tithe, give 10% back. And God said, test me in this. So I did it. Some people have perverted that with the prosperity gospel, and that's because they want to get rich.
Right.
But my goal was to have peace. And thus far, God showed me that doing that gave me peace, because I knew if I gave my 10%, God always like blessed me like abundantly. And if it would be a job, or somebody would give me food, or somebody, you know, give me cash or whatever, there would always be a flow. But so then I kept on, you know, years later, decades later, when I was already feeling at peace with money, and I like had a nice flow, I started to think, hey, God, all my friends are profoundly influenced by money. Their lives are manipulated by it. They're affected by it. Even if they agree to it, their lives are being perverted by it, being contorted by it, being,
yeah,
like misshapen by it. And what I've noticed is money is a a belief system. You have to believe that this green paper has value, some sort of a social agreement.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, God, if this is just made up, and it's made up by a corrupt system called Babylon or the Empire or whatever you want to call it, what has real value in the human universe? And God was willing to answer it and let me know. And God showed me four things. And it's part of through conversation with other people. You know, things would come straight to my mind, but I'd bring it up to other people, and other people would add other stuff. And if their point was so good, I was like, wow, look, God just spoke. I just heard God through you, dude, or whatever. But it's kind of, you have to be open to be able to recognize God's voice. So God's answer was, number one, was time. Your time is inherently valuable at the very least to you. Number two was your energy and your health. Inherently valuable at the very least to you, but the system will confirm their value by offering you these green coupons in exchange for them.
Yeah.
If you're not, like, if you don't have what they want necessarily, or you, like, you don't have excess in something else, they will offer you, hey, we'll give you $10 an hour, or we'll give you, if they do have something, then they will give you $100 an hour, or whatever, it's right. A thing. Number three is the mysterious variable. And I take my prompting from the parable of the 10 talents and how I read it by Jesus. And he seems to be indicating that everybody is born with a gift or a talent. And the only problem is if you bury it. Everybody has a gift. And I've worked with poor children or disempowered children globally. You know, homeless kids in Peru or orphan kids in India and, you know, kids in this country and all over the world, and making art with them, and ultimately painting murals with them. And so I saw that each one of these kids had the gift. They have the spark of life in them, and they just need help to channel it or learn how to handle it and cultivate it and guide it. And I saw that the arts was a really awesome way to do that. Everybody has this gift. And the logic goes, you take your time and your energy and you use it to cultivate your gift till it raises the quality of it, and the system will offer you buckets of coupons at your feet, especially if it's something that they value, like you know how to build bombs, or you're good at carrying a football, running and not being tackled,
or you can manage the stock market.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly. Something that they like. So now you've taken your time and energy and you invest it in cultivating your talent. And then you take those three and you invest them into number four, which is your human relationships. Recently, somebody added your relationship with the earth and your relationship with God. I was like, yeah, dude, totally, man. That's real, man. That's for real.
Yeah.
So it's relationship with each other, with the earth, with God, starting with God. I would say starting with God, but human beings are more tangible. That's a more tangible place to invest your angel, because like for some people, God is just a theory until you've developed that understanding. But what I realized is you start out with relationships, starting with your mom in her belly, in her womb.
Yeah.
You know, she, you know, brings you to life and then she nurses you. And then your family raises you, and then your community supports you, and your teachers educate you, and coaches challenge you. You know, they train you, and your friends have fun with you, and they love you, and you have all. So all these relationships are meaningful and valuable, and maybe everybody's kind of already doing that already, but when you realize the system is stealing the time that you have to invest into each other's well-being, then you realize, oh, you're denying each other. We're denying each other our wealth.
Yeah.
One of the groups that I've learned that actually are a really great way to invest your energy was the Catholic worker, for instance, in LA has a soup kitchen.
Yeah.
The Catholic worker in New York City has a soup kitchen. It's not a Catholic worker. It's a worker, but it's Martin's. It's kind of tangentially part of the family in San Francisco. They have a soup kitchen. And I saw that when I invested my energy into that, that there was always like this beautiful spiritual dividend that would come back. You know, you go there, you spend your time, you do good work. You're, first of all, you're investing into strangers. You're feeding people you don't know,
yeah,
who aren't compensating you, and you're not getting paid for it economically.
Right.
But then you realize that you're making friends. You realize you're getting fed.
Yeah.
You realize you're getting opportunities. You realize you're developing compassion and empathy and knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And you're like, how valuable are those things?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So then you realize, okay, what do I actually want for my time, energy, and talent? Do I want this paper? Right. Do I want this plastic card that says that I have to believe has value on it, and at any point somebody could just shut it off? Or do I want to invest in people that I see regularly and that I love them, and in our relationship there we're changing each other, we're helping each other transform to be better people?
Yeah.
Like, where do I want to invest? Am I going to invest all my time, energy, and talent into virtual reality, which is controlled by certain billionaires? Right?
Right.
And who knows what they do with that energy? They're lathering themselves with excess and,
yeah,
over and over, and they're like gold-plated toilet seats and
yeah,
crap like that. And your family is starving, or your community is dying on the vine.
Right.
People are dying of opioid addictions or cancers, or, you know, kids are being sucked into gangs or being like,
yeah,
or alcoholism or whatever. Like, all this terrible stuff is happening in our world because we're so busy just trying to survive and,
yeah,
pay the rent.
Right.
So it turned out that learning how to live on the road and how to be at home on the road, on the street, on the earth, turned out to be a survival skill,
yeah,
that God taught me to know without me knowing that God was teaching me.
Mm.
But now, at this point where our economy could be,
yeah,
super fragile,
yeah,
and it's like really being toyed with by a crazy, narcissistic, selfish psychopath,
right,
it's like, oh, well, that's not what my economy is based on. My economy is based on the economy of God,
yeah,
or otherwise known as the energetics of God, which predate the American dollar,
yeah,
which is a very young monetary system. What is it, 70 years old? It's since the end of World War II. And if I've misquoted that, please correct me. But, and then even the civilization, this the United States is only,
yeah,
250 years old.
Yeah.
And this is, these very young entities are like controlling people's life.
Right.
And then you look back, even Western civilization is young.
Yeah.
These things are like determining how we are going to evolve as a species, as a being. No, man, my ancestors go back thousands and maybe even like millions, all our ancestors. But my ancestors kept holding the thing all these years, man. They kept on holding the torch of freedom, the torch of faith.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna carry it.
Yes.
I'm like, I will do my very best. I've trained myself for 35 years on the road to be ready to carry it. And maybe all this time, that's all that I was doing. I don't know. But it was also getting familiar with what was happening in America.
Yeah.
And what was happening in the world. Because you have to travel to see. You have to see what's happening outside of your little comfort bubble.
Yeah.
To see what's really going on. And when you start to do that and you start to see the highs and the lows and the ins and the outs, you're not as easily manipulated.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, like you said, God gave you that freedom and you feel you're living that freedom that God gave you. And I think that, you know, like I'm hearing you describe this kind of way of life, you know, it's so much, in a sense, like an anecdote to this like way that so many of us are trapped in, like this individualistic, you know, capitalism wants us to live this, like, you know, individualistic kind of lifestyle where people have their apartments, they have their jobs, they have to pay their bills, and we're narrowing ourselves. We're like isolated. Confining ourselves. We're isolated, right? And so, like, you know, Dorothy Day's oft quoted, you know, the community is the answer to the long loneliness, right? The only solution is community. I mean, kind of what I'm wondering is, I think a lot of people, like, listening to this, like, are not necessarily ready to, you know, live the same life that you're living. And so I'm thinking about, like, what can be, like bridges, or what can be, like, touchstones for some people who are, like, you know, feeling like somewhere in between, or, like, what is that, what do you see as ways that people can kind of tap into that freedom who are not, you know, ready to commit themselves to be a traveling artist as yourself, and who still are, like, you know, living in one place, and who have, in a sense, more, you know, traditional Western lifestyle of living in this country, right?
Such an intelligent point. Thank you. Right? Doesn't have to be a wild jump. It could be, there could be small steps, could be mid steps. Like, you go down to the soup kitchen and you volunteer.
Yeah.
Get familiar with people. That's,
yeah.
The LA Catholic Worker every summer has an internship.
Mm-hmm.
Where young people go for 6 weeks and they get to be familiar with the organization. They see what they do, and they learn how to, you know, volunteer at the kitchen regularly. They are introduced to some very cool aspects of the community connections,
right,
up and down the coast. So I saw that for a young person, that's a very good thing. Even it may sound too mainstream to some people, but, like, go on a mission trip, you know, they have chaperones,
yeah,
of some sort, like kind people who are mature and somebody's parent or something, but, or they're a pastor or something like that. I thought that was cool because they got to interact with communities, and I thought that was a very good way, because what it does is it kind of radicalizes you when you see other people's lives.
Yes.
It, you immediately start, wakes up your humanity. You feel empathy. It's not just on the TV screen. Another way is, if you're not ready to kind of do that, also, if you go on a hike, you could go small hikes. But if you like backpacking, if you have some athletic inclination, this continent has amazing secular natural hikes. Like, the AT, man, Appalachian Trail, it's right here, and it's from Georgia to Maine.
Yeah.
And there's so much population density around it that there's a lot of amenities along it, even though the nature is really astounding and pretty clean. And but they also have structures that people have built along it, which is really beautiful. And if you go for 100 miles, man, what happens is your brain starts to relax.
Wow.
If you're able to give yourself that, you can unplug from the digital, and then you just allow your brain, and then it starts to become more natural, starts to become more organic again. And you can hear God, you can listen. And then even people who aren't inclined to have a religious experience, they're not trying to, they start hearing the promptings of the Spirit. And then, yeah, and then, like, people have walked the AT, the CDT, the PCT, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail as the Triple Crown, man. And they're like, what's next? You know, because afterwards, you don't want to go back to an average, normal, boring life. You want to do the next thing.
Yeah.
And that's where the power is. The power is in your spirit. When you light when you, like, fan the flame of your spirit, it just, you get excited about stuff. You're inspired.
Yeah.
And I realized that as a young person, that God was speaking to my soul. God inspired me to go to India.
Wow.
Right? And before I even left the United States, God inspired me to go to Israel as well on the way. And so I was like, okay, it wasn't my plan, God, but that's Israel, Palestine, so be it. But that was on the pathway to India. Like, wow, these spiritual high points.
Yeah.
That's really the key, is, like, hearing that voice, yeah, and finding your access point. And even, like, to volunteer, to do that volunteer gig is like, it's a humble step. You could do one once a month.
Yeah.
And then maybe once every 2 weeks. And then maybe once a week. Right. And then if you're really digging it, you want to do it more and more. Even when I lived with my partner for 3 years and two kids in Albuquerque, I was able to pay rent, at least my half of the rent. She was a teacher and I was paying as a painter. I was painting murals and I was able to pay half of the rent through, and you know, half of the groceries and everything through painting.
Yeah.
And that showed up, that God kept on giving me those gigs, was really important. But in the meantime, I was able to volunteer every week.
Yeah.
I could go to the homeless facility.
Right.
At United Methodist, and with Brother Ralph, and we'd share food with the homeless, and they'd listen to him preach, and we shared clothes with people, and people loved Brother Ralph because he's one of those dudes who gives his shoes to the dude who doesn't have shoes, and such a kind man, his energy is so clear and so clean, it's like moving past you, you know, but he's been cleansed by that service work for that many years, but that was like at least once a week, right?
Yeah.
But then when I could do it twice a week, and I started to volunteer at the community garden.
Right.
And then when I could work three times a week volunteering.
Yeah.
And I think there was one time when I was able to do four times a week. And that was the Mount Everest of volunteering, man.
Yeah.
Because for painting a mural, I could hit a wall for 300 pretty easy in 3 days.
Yeah.
And leaves a lot of flex in the rest of the month.
Yeah.
And rent was cheap in New Max.
Nice.
Right? You know? Yeah.
That's good.
Right. It was beautiful, man. It was 2009.
Okay.
2009. That 15 years ago?
Yeah, I'm hearing for some people, it's like, how could we allow ourselves to be guided by like that spirit, that fire within us?
Yes.
You know, for our like when we're like for small things and for big things, how do we let that guide us and not how do we allow like money, the promotion, you know, the best like options in regards to money guide us?
Yeah.
But how do you allow the spirit guide you? Right. I think that's like, you know, I think that's in a sense like how you've, you know, lived your life, right? But I think that like taking that bit of wisdom is like everybody could apply that to themselves. You know, how are you guided by that spirit, that fire within you, and how do you let that take the front lead, you know? I think that's powerful to ponder that.
Please do, dude. Young people,
yeah.
You have more flex.
Yeah.
Right? Some people take a gap year after high school.
Or after college.
Or after college.
Yeah. Or whenever, honestly.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a gap decade.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But you take, you know, you take care of your spirit a little bit. You just think about it and you say, okay, what does my spirit want?
Yeah.
And I could hear my spirit wanted to go to India because a lot of the most inspired young people who were musicians from the 60s, they were like pointing to India as the older knowledge, you know, the ancient wisdom.
Right.
So I'd always had this curiosity. And, you know, Buddhism came out of the Gautama Buddha. You feel it. You just have to be real with what you feel.
Yeah.
And even if you can't admit it to yourself, just write it down. Just say, okay, that's just in my head. I'm writing it down. I'll probably ignore it, or maybe I'll look at it later. But
yeah, it's just listening, tapping into that.
Yeah. Because just consider it. What if God is talking to you?
Yes.
What if God loves you? What if the creator and the source of the infinite universe, the infinite realms, dimensions, and realities loves us and is communicating to us and is trying to help us grow into the fullness of who we're meant to be?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be an interesting idea to explore a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's going to guide your life. Yeah.
Just test it. Just test it out for a moment.
Try it. Yeah. Yeah. I thought
I'd leaf through it one time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Some magazine had some nice pictures on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you get that subscription, right? That draws you in. Yeah. You know, I want to ask you about painting and about murals.
Yeah.
And maybe it's harder to talk about that than it is to, you know, just paint it.
Oh.
But, you know, we just did a wonderful mural project this past week at Iona University. Yeah. And I wonder, can you just share a little bit about what's your process? How do you bring people in? Oh. Just talk about painting murals.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
It starts with relationship. And the relationship starts with, you know, I've cultivated a relationship with the Catholic worker. And so I've painted for them many times in different states and different cities. And here I was, and I was developing a relationship with a young Catholic worker named Liam, who's sitting across from me right now. Yeah. And then Liam was doing IEC, and through IEC, I was meeting this other professor from Iona University named Jim Robinson, and he got excited about what I do. And he and I got to talk, and he said, "Hey, would you be willing to do a project up at our college?" And I was like, "Yeah, man, maybe next year." And so for the next year, he and I talked on the phone. We hashed out the details, and we briefly talked about subject matter. And so I was, you know, coming, kind of envisioning something, and the theme was environment or ecology, activism, art, and spirituality.
Yeah.
Like a confluence of all of those.
Yeah.
And so I've done that kind of stuff before for Earth Week. And I did it at a high school in L.A. called Loyola High School. And I was there for a week and living with the Jesuits. And I worked with all these young people. And it was really fun and interesting. And it felt like it was educational. And I, at that moment, the subject matter was about the L.A. water system. And I wanted those young men who were going to that all-boys school,
yeah.
I wanted them to recognize they are responsible for this water system. And if they let it get destroyed, then it's on them.
Yeah.
Right? It's like all we can do is do our best to help protect it and also teach them how they could potentially advance the guardianship of these yes. waters. And it's fun and it's interesting and the process is interesting. So then, me and Jim, we set up a time and a date, and here I arrive, and in New York, by train, which was really a beautiful train ride from Emeryville, California, which is East Bay, in San Francisco, and the California Zephyr, going through the Sierra Nevada mountains, was amazing because the depth of the snow in April, beginning of April, was astounding. It's wow. such a good sign for the West.
Okay.
Because if the Sierra Nevada mountains are so massive,
yeah.
if they such a massive snow catcher, and they're such high mountains, that if they're like catching a bunch of snow, those are fat rivers for the whole season, man.
Yeah.
And we came to a place where it looked like the snow banks were 10 feet high and it was still snowing.
Amazing.
And I think we crossed Highway 80, Interstate 80, and it was shut down because of the snow.
Wow.
And so then I was just witnessing it crossing. And then we went through the Rockies, which has also had snow, and they were beautiful and amazing. We went along the Colorado River. All of this stuff has just blissed me out. But we met on Monday, and we start setting up the wall. We buy the materials, which was a giant painter's canvas, which is, it's a canvas of sorts, and it's more porous than a canvas you'd buy at a store, but cheaper.
Yeah.
And we took it. It was a 9x6 piece,
mm-hmm.
and we took primer paint, and we covered it. And suddenly, it becomes our canvas.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a wall in this instance. But the three of us, Liam, Jim, and I, primed it really quick, and we left it in a room to dry. The weather had been kind of cold and moist the week before, wasn't it? It was pretty...
I think so.
It had been pretty, like, wintery.
It's colder, yeah. This past week was very warm, though.
Yeah, but really, this last week, it was like, God just flipped the switch.
Yeah.
The sunshine and nice weather. Only now did we get like a lot of wind.
Yeah, the weather was nice for us.
So then, but now we have all the materials. We also went to an art store and bought a bunch of materials. Yep. Tuesday, I had to boogie back to Iona from Mary House in New York City. But like I had to wake up at the crack of 5, get cooking by 6, get up there by 8, and sketch it all out on the canvas so I could be ready for the class at 11. And the first layer for me is what I call the symbolic layer or the prayer layer.
Yeah.
And all of it's made up of all these symbols, two-dimensional symbols that are meaningful to me spiritually from the journey, you know, all the different elements, but they're like whole sentences in a symbol.
Mm.
And they represent different elements that kind of make a prayer, all of them together. And I've heard people call it the spirit coat, which I think is a very cool name.
That's nice.
The spirit coat. But I'd sketched it out in orange in crayon. That's one of my tools, is a carpenter's crayon. Because a carpenter's crayon is what the builders use, and you can go over almost any surface with it.
Wow.
Then I would have painted them all myself, but it was time to get all these to class. So then I brought it in, and I Jim introduced me and start talking to the kids a little bit, and then I have them all start painting the symbols.
Wow.
And I usually want a light color, nothing too heavy or strong, because you have to make it disappear a little bit. Otherwise, it doesn't disappear over some of the underneath some of the paint.
Right.
The subject matter on top of that, which was a giant ginkgo tree. The ginkgo tree, from what the pictures I saw, are orange. And in this case, I didn't want an orange background. I needed it to be like something cool. So like, you know, a cool background.
Yeah.
A green tree. But as soon as I had the big shape of the tree, I could start having the young people paint in the shapes around the tree, like the sky. And so I would just keep a theme of blues and have them paint in. And then, it doesn't matter how much talent they have. They could have almost none, but they could just fill in a space.
Right.
And what is revealed in this, once again, is that it relaxes them.
Yeah.
And I pray God's blessing and protection on that. Just for people to be able to use their hand, not expected very much of them. They're just filling in a place and just make the white spots disappear.
Yeah.
Just fill it in. Go as close and careful as you can.
Yeah.
You know? And the point is for them to enjoy it.
Yeah.
They're not going to be graded for anything, at least not from me. But I guess if they're in attendance, I guess that's a thing. But just enjoy it, man. Because we were outside.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're outside. We were on tables, so as people didn't have to bend too far. Normally I'd have it on a wall so they could be standing up and facing right to it. You know, the sun is shining. There's a little breeze. We're covered by trees, so there's some nice dappled shade happening. And you start to see them relax and talk to each other and paint and get into it and want to do more. And the people who weren't into it and didn't want to do more, I was like, okay, you know, have a good time. See ya. But the ones who, many of them wanted just like, what else can I do? And it's like, right on, man. And the key, and no bad vibes for anybody who's like only partially interested. It's because everybody has their own, like their own thing.
Yeah.
But that it's an open invitation. Everybody participate. And I wanted to remind them, this is a memory stone. This is a memory piece. All of you are here today. This class, look at each other. In 10 years, this painting will still exist. And you'll look at it. You remember that painting we did?
Yeah.
And then it turned out like 100 people participated.
Yeah.
Like three times this 150 people participated. So it turned out to like 450 people were painting, even though it was like the same. Some of them were the same. Turns out the Pope passed.
Yeah.
On the first. And here we have a nature subject, right? The nature subject is the tree. And we're an ecology group, and that's the theme of the day. And this is Earth Week. And the Pope passed. Astounding, miraculous timing of all of these things. So immediately it was obviously clear. Oh, we have to paint the Pope. We got to put him in there, man. He's got to be in there. I didn't need to put him in immediately, and it took me until Wednesday, I think, before I knew I had to put the Pope in. On Thursday morning, I get there at 8 o'clock, or I get there at, I think I got there by 8, and I started, like, slapping down white to block him out, try to just make his shape on the thing, on top of all that color that's already been painted, and then at least that simplifies it, because now we know subject matter. Then I spoke to one of the high functioning artists. I said, "Hey, would you be willing to take a crack at this?" And she said, "Yeah." And so I gave her the tool, man. And she, with the red crayon, she did excellent. The first step in that process is to have them draw it on paper, and then she did a, I could see she could do the face, and she could do the body, and she understood proportions, and she knew how to do it. And then she did excellent first sketch.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, you're doing it.
Yeah.
I don't need to do anything. So she, right? And then she took the paint line, and that's a light color of green, because I wanted to stand out from the background, but at the same time, I don't want to stand out too much. I don't want it to be a dark line yet, because if you make a mistake, it's hard to, it's intimidating to correct. But here, then she sketched it out, and then she went, she was so focused. She was so determined. She didn't even look up. She just focused. She, you didn't have to give her, say anything to her, because she was on it, and she was moving it forward, and she was making it happen. And I was just so grateful, because I could then I could work with all of the kids who had different levels of talent, and I could help like keep on bringing the color, because now after the background was set, I was having them each draw an animal, an insect, or a plant, and then I would bring those would be more with the reds and the oranges and the yellows and the purples to bring forth the warm colors, because it had been so much blues and greens,
right?
So that was the process, and at the end, she blacklined the Pope, and it was looking, everybody was super happy with it. They're all super pleased to have been participant with it, and this is memory stone to honor his life and to remember his passing.
Yeah.
And so when that hits you, how many things lined up, you're like, wow, masterstroke. Bam!
Yeah.
Grand slam. Pow!
Yeah. Yeah, I felt that way too. And just how, you know, so many of the students were able to be brought in, like you said, with various levels of ability. Like, I remember one of my students during the week came up to me and he was like, you know, professor, like, I can't paint, you know. And I said, like, don't worry, like, just try it. I bet you can. You know, and then you guided all the students really well, and then he was sketching, he was painting, and he was really into it, you know? So everybody engaged differently, but just, like, nobody had to come as a perfect artist, and everybody was able to really be involved. I just love the community aspect of it. Like, you start with that prayer layer, and you start with something, and you have kind of a vision, but it's so open to, like you said, a student sketches a butterfly, and they add it on, and that's totally what from their own imagination, you know, and then it's part of the final product. And so it's just a beautiful, you know, you went on the pilgrimage during Holy Week, there was Easter, we mourned Pope Francis, and then we did the painting and the mural, and I think that really kind of helped to, like, bring a lot together, you know, to help, the brought, you know, closure in some ways. I think it helped to, like, bring new life, too, you know, so just a really wonderful week that we had together.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I just want to ask, as we close the podcast, Dimitri, if you can name three things, as we ask all our guests to do, and you can just briefly name them, but I'd like to ask you if you could name one plant, one book, and one ritual or prayer. And these can be things that have, you know, been on your heart, or that you've seen recently, or just anything that's with you. So a plant, a book, and some kind of ritual or prayer.
So let's start with the plant is the oak tree, and the oak tree's resilience to the fire. In the West, we have something called fire ecology, and the seeds of a lot of plants actually need fire to crack open. And the oak tree has survived fire in the West for so long, it's used to it, and therefore it has very thick bark. And I saw, like, after the fire in January, I left LA and I was in San Francisco for February, and we had rain. LA had big rain. And then I come back in March and there all this new growth, as I said before. It was astounding. So yeah, the oak tree is a great teacher. The second thing is the book. In this case, man, in honor of Pope Francis, Laudato Si.
Yes.
Laudato Si was a very inspiring ecological encyclical. And that, and I remember tramping across the country carrying Laudato Si and carrying a book by King, The Power to Love, which was his collected sermons. And I was like, I am walking with giants.
Mm.
right? With the, and the power of those spiritual words were so astounding. For him to leave that for us,
yeah,
is just such a treasure. And the third thing was the ritual or the ceremony. Interesting you say that, because something that was very transformative on that pilgrimage during Holy Week, when we walked from New Haven to New London, and we're about to get on a Zoom call about that court hearing that we have for that arraignment. We landed at this Nuke engineering base, electric boat, it's called, on Thursday, and we demonstrated there. And our demonstration was a foot washing on Maundy Thursday, which is the day that Christ washed the feet of his disciples, which was so moving to me that through ceremony and ritual, we can cross the ages. We can cross the millennia and reconnect with all of our spiritual ancestors who humbly around the globe have done the ceremony to honor the teachings of our beloved Christ, to love each other. And for us to do it in front of this base, to wash ourselves clean of Babylon, but also prepare ourselves for martyrdom, and to bless each other, and to nourish one another, and to show love, and to serve one another, it completed the march. All those days on our feet, and now we're washing each other's feet.
Yeah, that's powerful. Yeah, well, thank you so much, Dimitri, for sitting with me. I'm glad we can continue this conversation.
Thank you, Liam. God bless you, my brother.
Amen.